morning, good morning, and good morning, and welcome to A Chat in the Garden with Monique A.J. Smith, where significance blooms here in athletics and sports business. We have a new media partner for this week that I'm excited to share about. This person came about with connections with my good friend, rest in peace, Clark Garrison. So, She's the Number One Fan, which is a Facebook group that celebrates women and who follow football. So I know that's a lot of us. I had to get my fix by watching Last Chance U. So you know I really must have been fiending because that show really makes my blood boil. But anyhow, She's the Number One Fan will air in the Facebook group by the same name, She's Your Number One Fan, this Saturday, September 19th, a panel at 5 p.m. to discuss why women love football. And it includes the author of the book, Football is Just Like Shopping. Trina Teague, she just joined the group as well, and I just purchased her book. And there is a link inside Chat in the Garden to purchase her book. So if anything else, you'll at least know that speaker that's going to be talking about why women love football. So, and join them at 9 p.m. again in the Facebook group. Go ahead and just go ahead and like the group and get notification. She's the Number One Fan. Now, for administrators, you kind of go like, I'm not a fan. I work the game. But let me tell you something. The best administrators learn the behaviors of their fans. And women fans are a reason why they began to have women football clinics. Yeah, because you'd be surprised that who would decide where expendable income goes in the household. And so that's how you come up with the family packages. Yeah. So, you know, go ahead and join on in because you never know what can grow from that. And I'm glad that, hey, I just feel honored that they find value inside the garden to advertise with us. And let's see, Saturday at 9 p.m. Yes, I'm available at 9 p.m. I got a basketball tournament. No, take that back. It is Saturday the 19th at 5 p.m. At 5 p.m. That's why I said go to the group and get notifications. Yeah, that would be really, really a good place to be. And, yeah, so it's on, you can also watch it on your phone and whatnot. And it's recorded, so it's not live. So, but, yeah, we need to combine ourselves with our fans. And especially if you, well, you know what, especially if you're not having football, here's a good time to engage all your fans in different type of ways. So, yeah, if I was on a college campus, I would figure out how to have engagement with all our fans on the Internet. And it may be bringing on a former player, a current player, have trivia games against each other, play some old games, and have people do commentary behind it. You got to be really inventive. Your marketing team, get them involved. But, again, mark your calendar September 19th, Saturday at 5 p.m., and listen to the panel, Why Women Love Football. And I'm pretty sure that the panelists will be also on the Facebook Live commenting on the video. Hey, I am still pumping. If COVID-19 hasn't taught you anything else, that you need to have an additional income stream. And, hey, and I've had a couple of folks to say this to me, and I'm going to say it to you all. When I say additional income stream, I don't mean if you're in athletics and you go teach a class on campus. That's not what I mean. additional income stream means the source is a different income. So you're not changing the source because it's still coming from the university. So if something happens to the university and it closes down, that goes both those so-called income streams go away. Okay? So you need to diversify the type of income you get. So this is why I think Jolene Robinson's opportunity is key, because she comes from the athletic side, and she's still in athletics. And so she's gone from coaching winners in basketball to coaching women like you and I in the financial investor game. Now, and let's just be clear, when you're investing, there is a risk, but you have to learn how to take a risk, and it has to be a calculated risk, and I'm pretty sure she's going to talk you through that as well. So we all need additional income streams, this is just one of those. Find out by contacting Jolie Robinson at 980-298-2231. Again, 980-298-2231, or email her at jrobinson@steppingtowin.com. That's steppingwin.com. Let us continue to grow together. With deep expertise in leadership, management, and policy issues, Dr. Janae helps organizational leaders identify and change underlying causes of racial tension and biases within their organization by providing a safe and structured environment for individuals and teams to have tough conversations about diversity, inclusion, and equity with the goal of greater understanding and overall organizational improvement. Contact her to bring her to your campus, either in person or virtually, by knockoutbias.com. Again, that's knockoutbias.com. And I am continue to be ecstatic about our long-time partnership with Tawana Smith, soon to be Dr. Tawana Smith. She wrote the book Surviving the Life, the Professional Athlete's Playbook to Avoiding the Curse. And, again, we talked about additional income streams and things like that. And you'd be surprised, you know, we have student athletes who only have one goal in mind and they're not diversifying. And that's all well and good, but they will have someone else that they trust managing their money, and they may not understand the specialties or the professional piece, which is, which I learned from the book, that even if you sign, you only get paid when you actually run on the field. And that being, but that knowledge, that also assists me in some of the thought process of individuals who may have a fear of competing, but will compete because they know they can't get paid unless they're on the field. So what are the things, the shelters or the things that can take place? You know, even the NCAA says if you help with the marketing of or the publicity of, you are considered like an agent. So I'm not saying administrators are agents, but you are someone that they come to for advice. So why not get all the information that you can get to assist them in making good choices of who assists them after they leave your college space? Even the part of who helps them find their real estate. You buy a big house for your mama, and then you rent. And here's another thing. You know, people will give free things to people who have just signed or whatnot. And when they're no longer playing, guess what? They have no credit because their name wasn't put on it. Their manager was put on it. So these are just things that I learned that was very interesting. And I use it as a resource to go back over so I can abreast myself of what I just don't know. And that's the key. You don't know what you don't know. So get the book, Surviving the Lights, a professional athlete's playbook to avoid the curse. It's in three different formats on Amazon.com. It is an ebook, paperback, and audio. Coming soon, coming very, very soon, is Dr. Chico Caldwell's a course that he did an excellent job all spring. And I am still using some of the things that he taught, how to create a success culture in athletics. Excellent, excellent information. He has just been certified to give the course for credit, CEU credit. Isn't that excellent? So stay tuned to find out how to receive the information to sign up for it. So if it is for credit, there will be an investment. But it will be investment very well deserved because I learned a lot from it and of information because it's models. And in order to get a model or system into your head, you got to do it more than one time, to be quite honest with you. And I've even purchased the books that he used to create it. And I will still say his delivery is a lot better than the book itself. So stay tuned, Dr. Chico Caldwell, Success Culture, Creating a Success Culture. And I will say his Dr. Chico Caldwell and his model, because when you create a system, it's like muscle memory. When you see something a little different, you fall into a system, you know how to win it. And the last couple of ones he talked about, systematic thinking, which was really key for me, really key for me. So I know I'm going to be there and you should be too. I am still teaching. I had a great time, to be very honest with you. Last week, I was invited to another Facebook group community called the Leaders Community. And I taught my signature workshop that I've been doing called We Got Now. And it was really great. I mean, I began to use We Got Now because of the COVID. And I wanted to change the mindset that although this feel like this is happening to us, we can use this time for us. And then again, you know, I used the e-workbook that I created that expands my chapter in the book, Removing the Face, and my chapter is called Public Figure Mask. And so We Got Now talks about being a first, and the pressures and how do you navigate those pressures, which is I give the details in the chapter, and then I flesh it out in an e-workbook. And so because I gave the opportunity to those in that Facebook group this, I'm going to also give it to you all. If you purchase the book today, in the next 24 hours, I will gift you the e-workbook that goes with it. Okay, so go to publicfiguremask.com and the book, and I will also email you the e-workbook that talks about being the first, and it goes with what's going on now, because we've never seen such things before. And how do you navigate that? And navigate in your head space first. Because how you think is how you move. And so I'll be glad to gift you with the workbook to help guide you in your thought process in times of uncertainty. Okay. So we are now, the time has come to introduce our guest for today. And I'm excited about today. And I sent her a message because I wanted her to tell me how to say her name, and she did not do so. And so I'm hoping that she will. Oh, okay. Oh, she did. Praise God. All right. Oh, okay. So I haven't had a chance to practice it. But let's hope that I can say it right the first time that I get it. Okay. So this individual I met in person at the, let's see, where were we? We were at a conference here actually in Virginia. It was my first conference at NASS. And she can talk about a little bit what NASS stands for, but to give it a short explanation to you, it are researchers who look at sports and society. And we sat on a panel together with Dr. Francie Kahn. Oh, okay. I wasn't ready yet to bring her on, but just hold on. And Dr. Carla Fanzink, and we sat on a panel, and I tell you, I was impressed with what she had to say. And when I tell you she's passionate, it comes oozing out. And I was said, okay, and you know me, I'll ask you right there on the spot in the hallway, can I get you on the podcast? And so, honestly, it's almost been one whole year when we scheduled this. This is how far out we are in the chat in the garden. So, yes, get ready for the cheers, because I'm getting ready to bring Dr. Joyce Ogurende to the garden. How'd I do?
You did awesome, Sister Smith. I'm so elated to be on the show with you. You did great.
Thank
for
you,
the first
time. We're going to take Dr. Joyce from now on, okay?
No problem. Or Dr. O, that's what my students call me.
Because I was like, okay, she didn't come up with today here. But just for everybody else, say your whole name again for everybody so they can hear it correctly.
Yes, Dr. Joyce Olushola Ogurende.
Okay. Well, girl, I am so glad to have you on the show. Wow.
I'm also excited.
Well, we're going to start off by sharing with our audience your journey from college to your current position.
So I am Nigerian, if you can tell by my name. So my parents were like, you have to go to school, and I had to be a doctor. So it was very quick that I found out that I'm not a fan of blood. So I knew I couldn't be a medical doctor, and I knew I loved sports. I grew up in a household where both my parents played sports. We played sports together as a family. I played basketball and I ran track. So I knew I wanted to stay in the field somehow. So I actually started my career in undergrad as an athletic trainer. I did that for 2 years, and I had a mentor at the time that sat me down, and I was at kind of like at a crossroads with my career where I was offered a position to be a full-time trainer. And, you know, my mentor sent me down and told me that if this is what you want to do, you just have to know that you may not have the life you want to live, you know, as far as having a family and raising kids, because this is a full-time job. And even as an undergrad, I was already waking up and at the facility, being there like 6 a.m., going to my classes, doing treatments, and then coming back for afternoon practices, and then cleaning up after that, and not getting home till like 8, 9 o'clock, and still having to do my homework. So, you know, I had a real come to Jesus moment that, you know, is this really what I want to do? And I talked to my academic advisor at the time that, you know, I don't know if I'm going to still do athletic training. What are my options? So I know God is not a God of coincidence, because literally they had just started the sport management program at University of Florida. And he's like, well, we just started, so you'd be the first class. So, you know, yeah, so we don't, you basically going to be the, you know, the test crew. I said, okay, that's fine. And it's been one of the best decisions that I've made, and just being able to work in different capacities in sport. So I worked with the Stephen C. O'Connell Center in facility management. I worked with the college, community college basketball team, and really helping as like a special assistant with their marketing and player management, scheduling, things like that. So I really got to see what happens behind sport to make sports happen. But more so, mm-hmm. I got to see how I can be more impactful to more people through sport. So I graduated from University of Florida, and I knew I wanted to do more with sports. I was still on the track that I wanted to work in professional sports. And but one thing that changed my experience before I left was actually in my senior year, I got an internship working with the local sport authority. And I walk in my first day and they thought I was the secretary. So I was trying to figure out, well, why would you think I'm the secretary? Like, weren't y'all expecting me? I was one of three interns. So here I am thinking like, oh, I'm only one of three people that got chosen for this position. And I get in, and the person that was at the front thought I was coming in, because I guess the secretary was on leave, or I think she may have been sick or on leave, so maybe they thought I was like the temp secretary that came to replace her. So that was one of the transformative experiences that I had, that I realized that in addition to creating more beneficial sport programs for people, that I could use sport as a platform to start identifying racial and gendered thoughts about people, and redefining how people see Black women specifically in these sports spaces. So I just love all that you and our sisters are doing. I'm so grateful to be here today, and all the chats in the garden, to just know that we are here, even if the numbers don't show it, that the work that we're doing is beyond what numbers can really show. So after college, I got a job with the Houston Rockets. I was working in inside sales, and at the time, the Houston Comets were there. So that Houston Comets, Cynthia Cooper is my shero. So that was like a dream for me to be able to work with the Comets and the Rockets. And I did well there, but I was behind a desk from 8 to 5. And so while I enjoyed being able to do the community service events, that wasn't part of, it wasn't tangential to my main position. And so I realized that I wanted to do more than just sell tickets and, you know, do community service every once in a while. So I decided to go to Temple University for my master's, where I worked under the illustrious Dr. Michael Jackson. And he really gave me an opportunity to see sports from every angle in a way that not only I could transform sport, that but sport would transform me. And one of the best things that he did was to connect me with the Don Staley Foundation, which was providing after-school programs for young Black girls, and that were focused on their holistic development. And so I saw sport being used as a platform to really address Black girls as whole people. And we talked about hygiene, we talked about fashion, we talked about their academics, we talked about communication. And I realized, like, wow, sport really can be this vehicle for change in ways that we haven't seen other traditional school or interventions do. So in addition to working with the Don Staley Foundation, I was also blessed to be connected with the Black Women's Sport Foundation. And that's when I was really challenged. I was able to teach PE at schools and community centers around Philadelphia, from the tiny tots, what we call them, the 3 and 4 year olds, all the way to high school. And what was really powerful about that experience is that we taught what are considered quote unquote non-traditional sport. And I'm so glad they're not traditional anymore, but they were fencing, tennis, lacrosse, rugby, field hockey. And I had to learn all these sports. And I remember going through the orientation to be a coach and PE instructor, And they were like, yeah, we're going to teach them lacrosse. And I'm like, so you want me to go in the hood with a stick? I don't know how this is going to work. So I realized, again, that it was more that for me to really use sport as a transformative tool, that it was going to have to transform me first. Mm-hmm. So I learned a lot about how we have foreclosed our identities as Black people and as athletes to what we can do and can't do, and, you know, what's considered a white sport or a rich sport. But really that anything we put our mind to, we can do it because of who we are as a people. And that's what I had to learn for myself so that I can teach that to our students. And so it was a really powerful experience to see young Black boys and girls golfing, playing tennis, and more so even just appreciating their body, you know. And that was the physical literacy part was also very empowering, because we grow up in a society that tells us to not like ourselves. And so one thing I love about sport is that your whole body has to be engaged. And so you have to have a knowledge of your body and an appreciation for what it can do in order to really do well in sport. And so that experience with Black women in sport was very powerful in that regard, because more than just teaching young Black children sport, we taught them to appreciate themselves and their body and to think about the potential that they have. So while I was there, my mentor, Dr. Nikki Frank, Olympian Nikki Frank, told me that, you know, if this is something I really want to do, I should go get a PhD. And I'm like, ooh, I wasn't even trying to get a master's, but if that's really what I need to do to go play with the kids, I'll do it. And backstory to track that, I was also working with the 76ers at the time, because I still felt like, okay, I could still have this impact in professional sports. And, you know, that's like the gold standard for people who work in sports to work in a professional league. So I was like, okay, maybe it was just the timing or the fit with the Rockets. Maybe if I go to the 76ers, that it will be a different experience. But it was a great experience, but it was still the desire to impact people more through sport than what I could do through my position. So from Temple, I went to do my PhD at University of Texas at Austin. And I was able to become more grounded in African-American philosophy, psychology, and really ensure that the approach that I'm taking to using sport is not reifying some of the problems that I'm trying to address. And so I'm really grateful for that experience, and having mentors like Dr. Francique and Dr. Harrison in the Center of African-American Studies there that really grounded us as scholars to appreciate who we are and appreciate our perspective in the work that we do. So I graduated from there, and with looking at high school sport and how sport participation and the benefits of sport participation vary based on race, gender, and class. And what was real interesting about that project was what I knew I wanted to say before, which is that Black girls are not getting as much from sport as they can or they desire. What was really also interesting to find out was that white girls weren't either. And so it just opened my eyes even more to looking at the intersections of race and gender and class and religion and these other social identities that shape our sporting experience. So it just helped me understand that, you know, what we're doing to help Black girls is not just going to be transformative for our girls and our women, but it has the power to really unlock a lot of stereotypes and ideologies we have about marginalized people in general, or people who are marginalized. So from there, I went to Arkansas State and was able to continue looking at Black girls and Black women's sport participation and really linking it back to developing them holistically, you know, particularly in a state like Arkansas, where it was at the time the third worst state when it came to obesity rates, that I wanted sport to have a real tangible effect on the physical health of our people. But I also realized, too, that part of the reason why sport was not having this effect is because we kept coming to sport with this top-down approach that didn't really take into consideration the needs and the desires of the girls we were working with and the context in which they live. And so my work has really made me circle back to creating these more emic understandings of sport amongst Black girls so that we can create sport programs that are more relevant and culturally responsive to them. So that work now took me to where I'm at the University of Houston, continuing to look at what sport means to Black girls and how sport opportunities are shaped from them using Black feminist thought and a socio-ecological approach to looking at the intrapersonal, interpersonal, institutional, and environmental factors that shape how and why they participate in sport. And so that's what I'm currently doing now with the goal of creating sport programs for Black girls that address them as social beings on those different levels, but also create spaces for them to explore and expand who they see themselves to be.
Wow. I was taking notes. And And something just came to my mind because I work with Boo Williams, and we're getting ready to have the EYBL, not the full-fledged term like we usually have, but we're about to, you know, embark upon that. And last weekend we had the AAU, and it had the little third-grade girls, and it just blows my mind because when I was in the third grade, we were just playing tag. We were not organized sports, and I'm 52, so it's not so far down. But I do recall, if I look at my time as a youngster, it was a mindset that only the tomboys would compete, and they were rough and tough. And they didn't want, and I definitely would not call myself cute. That's not it. That was not why I didn't, if I thought that, you know, playing would not make me cute. And I wasn't trying to be cute. I just didn't want to get killed out there. They're going to knock my block off, you know what I mean? Because they were so competitive. And I was like, okay, I don't want nobody scratching me, nobody knocking me. That's the reason I said that is because that's one reason why I got into administration. My first year as AD, I sought for the NYSP grant for the fall because I wanted to introduce the girls to volleyball because where we were, none of the high schools had volleyball. And I said, they need to understand that if you can be a two-sport athlete, you're more than likely going to guarantee a scholarship. So you see how my mind went was opportunity if you could at least embrace the sport. And I knew that my lack of exposure to it being an organized situation, then I wouldn't have any fear of, and it wasn't the specialty folks. Because again, I lived in the country. There were two boys that lived across the street. I lived in the country, so let me back that up. Across the road, and they didn't allow me to play with them. So I didn't have, you know, when kids live in communities that are close together, you know, you can get a game together. Now, I think we did sometimes get a softball game together, and I could do that. That was less physical. But just what you were just saying about the cultural responsive to it, because it was not just the fact of how where I live, it was also the mindset of my parents. And I didn't know this till the guys told me. He said, your dad didn't want you to learn how to play basketball because that meant that you would have to touch us underneath the basket. You know,
wow.
Like post up. And my father was extremely protective of me. And I said, okay, so me knowing that, I'm going to be in a position to expose girls to as much as I can, anytime I can. So a person's background has a lot to do with their calling. And so I appreciate you sharing that because you put words to what I feel. I didn't even know there was a thing that I was feeling. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I do want to put a shout out there. So does that mean that you met Dr. Angeline Nelson when you worked with
her? Yes, I did. I sure did.
That's my girl.
I sure did. Yes. Yes.
She's been on here as well. Mm-hmm.
Yes. She is. Yes, please shout out Dr. Nelson. She was also one of the people that let me see that black women could be doctors, and which is important. I'm a first-generation college student as well, so it I didn't even think about, you know, outside of being a medical doctor, that wasn't, I didn't know that there were other routes to becoming a doctor. And so having her, seeing her, you know, having her as a role model at that time, along with Dr. Tina Sloan Green and Dr. Nikki Frank, was very powerful that, there is another way for me to still be a doctor. And so my mom loves the fact that she can call me doctor. And I love the fact that I can still be impactful in this position. So, yes, thank you, Dr. Nelson, for that opportunity to just be at your feet and learning from you and how you run transformative sport programs, and more so having the determination to do a PhD, because I can only imagine what she faced at Florida State, given what I, you know, when she went through the program, given what I had to face even now, you know, as a black woman, but more so even in my PhD, and being the first, I believe the first black female in my program. So,
I was not going to say this, but I'm going to say it. 'Cause what you just said about people being a doctorate, we have, and now people going straight through. I actually was told that I had to be asked to come into a program, because when I asked the question, I had the money. My father had just passed, and I got some inheritance, and I was about to, just sign up. They told me I just couldn't sign up. I had to be invited, and then I kind of found out that's not necessarily true. Would you agree or disagree with that?
Oh no, yeah, that's no, not at all. And I know now that my platform as a professor means more, because I know I even struggled with going back into the field and feeling like I needed to be more of a practitioner. But I realized that even just yesterday, I had a student ask me for a recommendation letter. And I've had students in the past ask me about grad school, and I realized that the power that I have now is to educate students on how to move forward in their education. And I'm so humbled that I've been in this position now, not just to impact people through sport, but just impact people through education and defy a lot of the myths that have been used intentionally or unintentionally to keep us out. And so yes, and identify that as such, you know, because the numbers will try to tell you that it's because we don't want to go to school, or we can't go to school, or we can't afford it. But really what the numbers don't tell you is how we have been treated and discriminated against us, and why we haven't been going. And it's not because we don't have the ability or desire. But knowledge, when they say knowledge is power, I know it's cliche, but it's true. Because just going back to your experience, had you known better, what choices would you have made, you know? And really holding accountable those people who know better to teach others to know better as well.
Outstanding. I want to delve into my question before I go with the question I have for the listener. Let's talk about Naomi in the U.S. Open and how she used that platform to educate not only us, but did you see the post I put up that in Japan they actually put a picture of every time, every mask that she was wearing with the victims, all right? And then at the bottom, there was a picture of the victim. That was powerful.
Mm-hmm. What it goes to show is that sport is political. And I know we try to use sport, some people try to use sport as this neutral ground, which is good. I think we need to recognize sport as a place where people can have the opportunity to do their best. And so her being successful at their game shows that even despite all that she's gone through, because the key thing is that we don't negate that she's had to endure things as a woman of color, but mm-hmm. she's still able to succeed, and that's really the story we need to tell. And the fact that she's highlighting Black Lives Matter and those who have fell victim to police brutality allows us to understand her story more, as it is part of this larger story of what's happening to people. And what it allows us to see through her success as an athlete is that she is a person. And I think that's what, you know, was really powerful to me, that she is humanizing the cause, right? This is not, even though we want to end police brutality, what we're really calling for is for Black people to be treated as humans. And I'm grateful for sport giving Naomi and Serena, the LeBrons and the Carmelo Anthonys and the Maya Moores, the platform to allow people to engage with them as humans, so they can now talk about, well, my humanity is also colored by my race. So if you want to appreciate me as an athlete and as a person, you have to also appreciate that I'm a Black person or a person of color in this space. Mm-hmm. And what's really powerful to me also too, because I believe Naomi represents this younger generation of activists who are seeing their athleticism as activism, right? It's not something you do off the field or, you know, for publicity sake. It's something you do with your sport and through your sport.
That was powerful. I was just touched because there were so many other athletes that did not necessarily want to be identified as Black, and she embraced and said that because I am a Black woman, and to be at the very top, because the first time she won, it was overshadowed with a lot of controversy that had nothing to do with her. So now it is, she's embracing controversy to use it to shine a light on to what some people thought were the same controversy for a Black woman. So for me, it's like the dynamic of you're controlling the message.
Yes. Yes.
That's freedom.
Mm. Yes. Yes. In research, we call those counter narratives. You know, when someone wants to tell you about you, you let them know, no, this is my story. And that's so empowering. These scholar athletes, if I can take that term from Dr. Keetra Armstrong, being able to articulate their experiences in ways that can reach the masses. And so it is very powerful to see how this new generation of athletes are changing the way that we have to engage them, right? We can't engage them in the ways that we stereotypically engage Black women, which is what they tried to do with her and Serena. You know, they already tried to pin someone as the angry Black woman or the entitled one or the one that's getting the handout. And she, through her success and her hard work and her own storytelling and Serena, were able to change that narrative. So now you have to see her as a person. more than as a caricature based on these ideologies about black women. So they're doing things that rest on the conversations that people like Dr. Nelson and Dr. Frank and you have been having. And so it's just a very encouraging time to see the work that we are doing articulated in the feats of these female athletes.
I know I'm on a podcast, but I could listen to y'all talk all day long. I just love it. Oh my God, it just gets me all excited. But I need to take a break to pay my bill. So we're gonna take a short break here in a chat and a guy with Monique AJ Smith, and when we return, we will continue this deep dialogue with Dr. Joyce. Oh my goodness.
Hello, I am Jolie Robinson, a retired collegiate head women's basketball coach and now a wealthy trader and business owner. Are you tired of living paycheck to paycheck? Do you feel financially stuck or strained? Or maybe you just want to make some extra money? If you said yes to any of these questions, then what are you waiting for? Contact me, 980-298-2231. It has truly changed my finances and life, and I just want to share this with everyone. This could be the change you're looking for.
Now more than ever before, our country is having real, honest conversations about race. My passion and experience in this area is why leaders of organizations come to me when they're looking for support around the issue of diversity and inclusion. I am Dr. Sharice Janae Nelson, and I'm committed to ending racial bias, one conversation at a time. Visit me at knockoutbias.com.
This is Alva Champion Amaker of ANA Athletic Consulting and Vigilant Safety Training Center. My investment to become a member of the Advanced Academy is one of the best decisions I've made in my business and personal growth journey. Working with Monique has provided the network to connect and collaborate with some phenomenal women and leaders, exposed me to literature for growth, and opportunities to share my skill sets and knowledge. Her candid approach in the one-on-one sessions make me more accountable for taking the necessary steps toward my advanced success. Thank you, Monique, and I appreciate you.
Let's face it, the AD position is an executive position. A member of the president's administrative team, the cabinet, the department deserves the same level of leadership, knowledge, talent, experience, and professionalism as any top official on campus. Presidents are looking for AD leadership who know how to build a success culture. Recognizing this changing landscape in athletics, join me at successcultureconsultantcoach.com for info on my next course on building a success culture.
Why do colleges support student athletes pursuing every profession except professional sports? Why are they treated as just students when they're athletes, knowing that they need help surviving their lives? I'm Tawana Smith, and as a former Division I and pro athlete and now best-selling author, I've created a transition system specifically for student athletes called Surviving the Lights. For more information, visit www.survivingthelights.com to learn how we can change the game together.
Welcome back. I'm your host, Monique A.J. Smith, here in a chat in a garden with Significance Blooms in athletics and sports business. Well, Dr. Joyce, I got two questions to ask. And before I get to the questions, I want to make sure everybody has an opportunity to purchase any of your publications that have any of your research in them. So please share that.
Oh, yes. So we recently, Dr. Francique and I recently wrote a chapter looking at black college coaches. And I can post the link to that book. Well, you already posted it, actually. I'm sorry. So it's already posted in the chat in the garden.
What's the name of it?
I'm going to look at the whole title.
Okay.
So
I
get it right. Because it's race as no. Let me look at it so I can make sure I quote it right.
Well, I'll come back to that because we only got like 8 minutes, so I wanted to just give you the opportunity to do that. So I have two questions from the same person. It's Denise Brown. She's director of budget and reporting for Pace University. What has been the most alarming disparity or statistics you have discovered in your years of research? And what negative disparity have remained consistent over the years requires more attention or action for change?
Yeah, the disparity or the statistic that has really hit me the most are these participation rates for Black girls. And I had a contrary experience to you, Monique, in that my parents encouraged me to play with the boys. I was often the only girl out there, whatever. It was football, basketball, baseball. I was out there, and I was good, almost as I could toot my own horn. I grew up in Texas, which is a very big sports state, even for girls, even if it's not at the level that boys and men play at. It was still very, for me, a very conducive sport environment. And so when I went to Philadelphia and I was doing sport programs with the Black Women's Sport Foundation, and there were girls who had never played a sport and never thought they could, that was baffling to me. And so when I see the participation rates, you know, at 20-30%, and even more so, which is low in even of itself, it has fluctuated, but more so that we're participating at rates lower than our male counterparts and our white female counterparts. That means that there's a gap in what we're providing for Black girls versus other children their age. So that disparity has been the most alarming and persistent to me, because what it keeps being, not only because of the numbers being so low, but how it's being framed that these Black girls don't want to play sport, that they live in poor, disadvantaged environments, so they just don't have access. And I'm like, yeah, but that's not their fault. So we need to stop framing this number as a condemnation on Black girls, or as a confirmation that they don't want to play or they can't play, but really framing it as a social issue. Why are we not building the facilities for them to participate in sports safely? Where are the physical educators and the sport coaches to engage them in sport at an earlier age, so they're more likely to stay in sport and gain the benefits of doing so, right? So we know from the literature in general that those who benefit from sport are those who are involved early, involved in a lot of activities, involved in a way that's meaningful and personal to them, and allowed opportunities to gain mastery skills in the sport. So the same is true for Black girls. And so what I like is that the research that's coming out now, there's one study from 2015 from the Poverty Research, it's PRRAC, and they talked about the low numbers of participation for Black girls as a matter of opportunities available, and that Black girls have less opportunities than their counterparts to participate in sport. And so let's look at why that is creating the numbers that we see around participation, more so than trying to use those numbers to condemn or confine Black girls. And well, so where I see the change is
Go ahead.
Oh, yeah. So that's where I see the change is really taking this more social ecological approach to understanding how and why Black girls participate in sport, and thinking about sport from their perspective as a means of creating more impactful and powerful sport experiences for them, right? Because nobody wants to be in an activity where they're being told that they're less than. So we need to not only change the structures of sport, we need to change the culture around it as well.
That's what I was talking about, Dr. Chico Carwell. He talks about change the culture, change the game. He did a like 2 months worth of training the trainers how to change cultures in athletics. The book wasn't for athletics, but he turned it that way. But I have a counter question as it relates to the earliest that you expose the young ladies to sports. How can we prevent the burnout? Because that's what I see. Those who find sport early and find success early, and then they're burned out by the time they're in college and don't want any parts of it after they're finished.
My thought to that is to create sport that's purposeful. And I think that's sport should have a soul, right? When we talk about sport participation, we talk about people participating in sport. And I think that's what we have to realize is that these are people who have desires, abilities, dreams, and goals. And if sport needs to help them meet those goals, desires, in order for it to be relevant to their relevant to who they are and who they want to be, and then pertinent to achieving those things. And so for me, I think that it's a win-win when we talk about sport being a tool of holistic development, because as young people start to see sport as integral to developing who they are, they're going to be more likely to stay in sport. And that, again, goes back to having quality facilities, safe facilities, having culturally competent coaches, having creating a team atmosphere, and creating an atmosphere that shows these young people that they are more than just athletes. They are people who are belong to races, gender, communities, right? Mm-hmm. And those communities shape who they are. And so the more that we can align sport with how people see themselves and how they who they want to become, the more we're going to see young people stay in sport and enjoy it. Because that's important too, is the enjoyment. And when it comes down to it, people want to have fun. Girls want to have fun. And we have sacrificed that play, that fun, for quote unquote athletic performance. But I actually think that play is central to performing well.
Play is essential for mental health.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, because when you're so focused on winning and you can't, it's like a muscle. And the muscle has to be relaxed in order to gain more strength. That's why you have recovery time. And so play is just that. It's recovery time without structure. And so, I mean, for a high achiever like me, I had to be taught that, because I'll never forget somebody said, why don't you just frolic on the beach? I said, what the hell is frolic? Yeah, so I get it, because actually solutions comes through your creativity when you're relaxed and having fun. And so speaking of fun, today has been fun. Thank you so much.
I'm so excited. I'm so honored to have been in the chat, having followed so many of my friends. I got to shout out Femi Olayo, Dr. Francie, Dr. Jasmine Hamilton, Dr. Nelson. So many beautiful, powerful Black women have come before me in this chat, and I'm honored to follow in their footsteps, and I'm more so humbled that you gave me and you've given us this platform to bloom.
Oh, bless you. Thank you so much. I want to say thank you so much, Jamila Harrison, serving as my engineer. Join us next Wednesday at 10 o'clock a.m. Eastern Standard Time for follow-up, such as about the book and the other publications from Dr. Joyce. Follow us on Facebook's A Chat in the Garden with Monique A.J. Smith. Have a significant rest of the day.